Still to come, top of the hour, New Jersey Devils general manager Tom Fitzgerald will be aboard. Joey Kenward from Sportsnet 650 will be talking about the Olli Juolevi trade to the Florida Panthers. What happened with Juolevi in Vancouver with that organization? Where did it all go wrong? And his thoughts on what we can expect from Vancouver this season. Meantime, a look around the NHL with our good friend Jim Boomer Gordon from the NHL Network Radio. He is a fine host there, and he joins me now on the program. Boomer, thanks so much for doing this. How are you today, bud?
Doing good. How are you?
I am very well. Top of the hour, Tom Fitzgerald is going to stop by, New Jersey Devils general manager. That is... like, that's a division, the Metropolitan, that, you know, everybody, you know, scramble the eggs. Everyone's got a different idea of how teams are going to slot. Are the Capitals going to age out? What are the Penguins going to be like without Crosby until the end of October and Malkin until January? Who are the New York Rangers? Can they take a step? The Carolina Hurricanes, are they better? Are they a push? Are they worse than they were last season? Where do you slot the New Jersey Devils into all of that in the Metropolitan, Boomer?
Well, it's good timing because we're doing our Eastern Conference picks in about 20 minutes. So perfect. I'm all prepped for you. First of all, I would start by saying that Washington is my out team. I just think they've been exposed the last couple of years as a team that's maturing. They still know how to win in the regular season, but winning gets hard and they are old. If that's a hot take, that's my hot take for the Metro. But I really thought Jersey showed me a lot last year. It was only 10 games. But for the first 10 games of the season, they were a really impressive young team. They had Ty Smith up. Sharon Govich was like this camp sensation that was proving he could play in the league. And Jack Hughes just looked like he went boy to man in the span of a summer, in the span of an offseason. Now, mind you, it was a long offseason, about 9 months or 10 months, but he just looked dominant. And they got rocked by COVID, and they were, I don't think they were ever the same after it. So you take the team that I think they were, young, improving. You get hopefully Heischer healthy back for this season. You get the addition of Dougie Hamilton on the back end. I'm inclined to believe they're the most dangerous, non-dangerous team in the entire Eastern Conference. When you do your East picks, there's at least 11 teams going into this season that think they're playoff teams, and there's only room for 8. So it's going to be a tight squeeze. But if I had to pick that one team, the one scary team, the one you don't want to play, and the one team that you think at the All-Star break, you go, wow, I can't believe they're in a playoff spot, it will be the New Jersey Devils. The goaltending's tricky. I'm a Blackwood fan, but he's made some decisions of his own, and I don't know how they're going to work out for him or the team this year. But yes, sneaky bullish on the Devils. And if you were playing the long game, maybe a couple bucks sprinkled on Lindy Ruff for the Jack Adams Award might be worth a shot.
You know, I'm with you on the Devils because, you know, that team that we saw last season from the, like, at the beginning of the year, I'm glad you pointed that out. Because they didn't win all their games, but every time I'd watch a New Jersey Devils game, a couple of things jumped out at me. One, this is a team that didn't play like a Devils team that I was accustomed to watching. Two, there was something that happened every game, or maybe it was an entire period, or maybe this was a power play where they fired it around. But there were a couple of moments where when everything clicked with the New Jersey Devils, you saw what this team could be. It's like, wow, if they could do that for 3 whole periods, all of a sudden we have a new dynamite team in the Metropolitan. And the other thing, Boomer, and this is what I always like about certain teams, I like teams that do something that defies common logic that we've had for years about the game. When I look at the New Jersey Devils, I mean, for how long have we been told, Boomer, that you have to have large centermen, that the guys in the middle need to be your playmakers and they need to be big? Jack Hughes is 5'11". Nico Hischier is only a couple inches bigger at 6'1". And, you know, at times, more so Jack than Nico, we're told, you're too small for this position. Yet, as the game evolves, and we saw this at the blue line position more than anything else, the smaller player gets more space and gets more room and gets more looks. Like, remember that old saying, Boomer, that a small player has to prove that he can play and a big player has to prove that he can't? That was the saying in the NHL forever. But look at the Devils between Jack Hughes and Nico Hischier. 1-2 up the gut, and I say, I really want it to work because it breaks what we've believed about that position seemingly forever. Agree or disagree?
That's actually the Doug Flutie as well, but I don't know if you watch much football, Jeff, but that was Doug Flutie used to say, you know, if you come into the NFL and they believe you're going to be great, you have to prove that you're not. If they don't think you fit the mold, you have to spend the rest of your career proving you belong. Now, as a counter to what you just said, Hischier and Hughes were both taking first overall. So did the Jersey Devils have this theory that small centermen can work, or did they just happen to draft the best players who weren't large centermen, and now they're doing the best with what they can? I understand your argument. I really do. But, I mean, at some point, if you want to be the beast of this division, you're going to have to go toe-to-toe with Crosby and then ultimately Malkin once he gets back healthy. And those guys are big and strong. So we'll see how it plays out. I watched Hughes last year, and he was absolutely electric. And you think, you know, when you can skate like that, when you can move like that, you don't have to be the biggest guy because nobody's going to catch you anyway. But I guess I'm just old school, Jeff, because I still like size down the middle. But it will be interesting to see how they stack up with the big boys in the division.
Speaking of big boys, that Hischier and Hughes will have to go against on a consistent basis, Mika Zibanejad re-ups with the New York Rangers. The Rangers don't like it. Many people look at the contract, don't like it, and I'm talking about the term. The decimal point seems okay, at least for the first few seasons of this contract, but they're betting on their guy. Do you have a thought on both Mika Zibanejad and his deal?
Well, I'm going to get into it on my show. I have several points. Number one, I mean, he's a 2011 draft, so that's 10 years ago, and he's still got a year left on his old draft. So you're buying 9 years of an aging player. I mean, so you're basically buying up his 30s. Does that work? Well, apparently to hockey it does, because if you go back and look at that 2011 draft, I mean, Edmonton went full-term with Nugent Hopkins, and Colorado went full-term with Gabriel Landeskog, and Jersey paid up to get Dougie Hamilton. If you look at the entirety of that 2011 draft, which sneaky become a great draft, everyone thought it was a bad draft, and it became outstanding as time moved on. But teams were just willing to pay up and for the long term. So I get a feeling when you and I are having this conversation 4 years from now, we're going to be looking at a lot of those eight-year deals and going, boy, this one's aging bad. Do you buy this player out? What do you do? So I wouldn't have done it. As it relates to Zibanejad, the player, as a standalone, I don't have a problem with it. I actually think he's worth the money. The problem is when you group it in with the rest of those Ranger contracts and ultimately Adam Fox, when he gets done at the end of this year, they're going to have an enormous sum of money tied up in a handful of players. Tampa proved you can win that way. But they had a special team, a GM who did a really good job, and he went out and found Goudreau cheap, and he found Coleman cheap. The MVP of this team going forward is going to have to be Chris Drury, and he's only been a GM for a couple of months. He doesn't have a lot of experience. To build a team the way they have built it and commit the money they have, the only way they keep this thing going is if they find value either on entry-level contracts with kids or they go out and find players that are affordable, because between Panarin and his 11 and change and what Fox is going to get and what Mika got this weekend, you're looking at $30 million on three guys, which is essentially what the Maple Leafs did. And you see the challenges Dubas has going forward. So top-heavy rosters can be tricky, and all the pressure is then put on the general manager. So we'll see how Drury handles all this.
To say nothing of if Kaapo Kakko finally breaks through, as many are expecting, to say nothing of Alexis Lafreniere. When he breaks through, and then you couple that with an $8 million AAV for Jacob Trouba, all of a sudden, all of a sudden you're saying, well, everyone else is coming in, to your point, on 750 entry levels, and that's the way it's going to be. Thank you very much. Is there one team, Boomer, is there one team out there that you just can't get a handle on, that you don't know whether they're going to be good, bad, they can finish top of the division, they can bow out? Is there one enigma team out there for you? For me, it's the Philadelphia Flyers. Do you have one?
Okay, so Jeff, you clearly weren't listening to the point last week on my show. We did a different power ranking every day, And one day was my top 10 teams that I don't understand. So you have one. I had 10. And for the record, the Flyers did finish third on my rankings. So I'll throw another one at you. I'll keep it in Canada here. I have no clue what the Vancouver Canucks are going into this season. You mentioned the Ylevi mess from yesterday, but that was a mess that was made years ago that just needed to be cleaned up. But if you look, I also did a top 10 on people who I've got a lot of pressure on them this season. I think I had Jim Benning at 2 or 3. This team just cannot afford another bad season. Benning can't afford it. Travis Green can't afford it. And for the life of me, I don't know what they are. If you look at what they lost last year when they lost Tanev, they lost Markstrom, they lost Foley, and people debated, will they take a step back? I thought they might take a step back, but not the step back they took. You remember those games that they played over and over again early in the season against Montreal, where they just got cratered, and you thought, wow, what has happened to this team, and what are they going forward? So Benning puts all his chips into the center of the table by taking a huge bet on Oliver Ekman-Larsson and operating under the assumption that he desperately needed a change of scenery to rejuvenate his career, which may be right. But if Ekman-Larsson can't play or continues to play the way he's played the last 3 or 4 seasons in the desert, this team is toast, and I have no idea where they go from here. You saw Elias Pettersson take a 3-year deal. That wasn't over money. He said it. He wants to play in a team that's going to win, and he wants to see what this team is doing. If it gets away from him this year in Vancouver, I just have no idea where the Canucks go from here. And I don't have any sense of what this team is going to look like going into this season.
Do you have a top team in Canada? Is it between Winnipeg and Toronto? Those are two obvious.
No, I think a lot of people that feel that way. To me, it's Toronto. I'm not nearly as bullish on Winnipeg as others are. I think Toronto's got a heck of a team. I think people want to focus on the playoff failure, but that's not on the GM. That's not on the coach. At some point, they've got a good enough roster. They got a roster that can win. They got a roster that can win a lot. At some point, it's just up to the players, which it was in Montreal and it was in Columbus, and they didn't get the job done, and they didn't look comfortable. So the question there to me becomes, are you developing experience or are you developing scar tissue? Because, you know, game 7 of that series against Montreal, the guys on the bench didn't look that comfortable to my eye. So if Toronto can step up and figure out how to get it done and how to win big games, I still think the sky is the limit with this team.
You see, I don't know how to, and maybe it is just experience, I don't know how to fix what we saw in that game 7 against the Montreal Canadiens. And that is a team that just froze.
Yeah.
Like right after that first goal goes in, right? Like right after Brendan Gallagher scores that one, and we've seen the Amazon series where, you know, Jack Campbell is beside himself about letting in a bad goal. It was right after that the team just, everybody froze up. Everyone put clamps on their game, and that was it. They were skating in mud after that, and they were playing like they were scared to make a mistake. And we saw this, funny, because we talked to Nathan MacKinnon, Elliot and I, in Chicago, and he talked about that feeling when the Avalanche let it get away from them after the first game against the Vegas Golden Knights, that they played tentative and they played not to lose and they essentially played, you know, scared. I don't know how, like, as an athlete you get rid of that, other than it's just something you go through. And what's the old Winston Churchill line? When you're going through hell, 'tis best to keep walking. That there's nothing you can do other than have that experience and keep moving on, and not get distracted. I don't know what the answer is.
I would tell you this much. I can tell you about another hockey team that looked like they couldn't handle the pressure of playoff hockey. They were called the Tampa Bay Lightning, and they caved against the Columbus Blue Jackets. As soon as they blew that lead in Game 1, they cracked. And in Game 2, you remember Nikita Kucherov took the stupid play that ultimately got him suspended for Game 3. They were toast. They got swept. They were done. And people were screaming, break up the Lightning. They can't win. 62-win team in the regular season can't win in the playoffs. Break these guys up. And they showed the resolve. I don't think they've lost back-to-back games in the playoffs in the last 2 years combined. They're a tour de force now. So they figured it out. At some point, the big boys in Toronto, and yes, I'm talking to you, Mitch, at some point, the big boys are going to have to step up, because I think there's a big bullseye on Marner this year, just because, you know, he doesn't have a single goal in the last two playoffs. at some point, the guys, you know, you wanted to be paid like a superstar in this league. And if you're making 11, score in the playoffs and get your team through in a couple rounds.
This is excellent stuff. He is a host of The Point on NHL Network Radio on Sirius XM Channel 91. Jim Boomer Gordon, it has been a delight. You have a show to get to on your own here, I believe.
Well, I'm at my desk already, so it's a short commute, yes.
Okay, very good. Always good having you on, pal. Look forward to catching up soon.
All right, thanks, Jeff.
There he is, Jim Boomer Gordon from Sirius XM, NHL Network Radio, Channel 91. I like his show, too. It's just no BS. This is what I think. Dig your heels in and defend it. Coming up in hour two, Joey Kenward, you will get into the Ylevi situation in Vancouver a little bit more. Also, in a couple of moments here, as we step away, other side, Tom Fitzgerald, general manager of the New Jersey Devils. Keep it here. Program, welcome to hour two. Bottom of the hour, Joey Kenward stops by from Sportsnet 650. More on the Vancouver Canucks and the Ole Ylevi deal. We saw him go from the Vancouver Canucks to the Florida Panthers. In the meantime, we're turning our attention now to the New Jersey Devils. A busy offseason, a news-making offseason, and a team that is very much on the rise, the New Jersey Devils. Their general manager, Tom Fitzgerald, joins me now. Tom, thanks so much for doing this. How are you today?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing well. There's a whole lot to get to. This is, to me, your squad is one of the more interesting teams around the NHL. Was just talking to Jim Boomer Gordon from SiriusXM a couple of moments ago, and we're making the collective point that, you know, at the beginning of the season last year, before everything with COVID went through this team, that was a team that was, you know, when they were clicking, really played well and showed signs of what could be. Injuries, of course, always a factor, and we all know the hardships the Devils went through last season. When you sat down and first took this job, did you have a, this is where we're going to be in 6 months, a year, 2 years, 3 years, 5 years? And if so, where are you in that model?
Great question. And yes, when I was asked to take over the job, I presented my blueprint of what I thought success would look like. And where we're at that time in January of 20, you know, that the rest of that season, and truthfully, this season was what I was calling the learn to win phase, like players learning and understanding what it takes to win hockey games and, you know, be in the fight. Would our inexperience catch up to us at times versus the experience that we played last year, especially last year in particular, our division? I every night was a war, but call that learn the win phase. Now, you know, we saw the jump in some of our younger players, you know, the Sharon Govich's and Kukin's, and then, you know, what Jack Hughes showed us and where his game is going. I just can't keep selling off all the bets at the trade deadline, right? It's we've got to make a statement. These players have to make a statement with their game and the way they prepare to play meaningful games at the end of this year. But I really thought, you know, right now, like we're in the if last year was the crawl stage, I think we're in the walk stage right now before we start running. So, you know, part of the mission this year was to go out and support what we have in place with our young players, our young good players with some experience, and we felt we did that without even jeopardizing any of our future. So we're super excited to get going here. Our fan base is excited. I think the way we practiced and how camp's gone. For me, I'm looking for commitment from these players. I want a commitment on playing the right way, coming to the rink every day with a purpose to get better. And that's the maturity that this group needs to walk through. And that's, like I said, we're in that walking stage right now.
You know, I'm curious about Jack Hughes, who is one of the more dynamic players in the entire NHL. The skating is sublime. The playmaking, I mean, he's a really creative guy, as you well know. And the thing about Hughes that you can appreciate more than others, since you deal with him on a day-to-day basis. When Elliot and I spoke to him in Chicago, and I hadn't talked to Hughes going back to when he was playing in the GTHL, we were both blown away at how confident a 20-year-old can be playing in the NHL. Like, it wasn't it's hard to describe. It wasn't an arrogance, but there was like a real confidence mixed in with a curiosity and a playfulness. I really don't know how to describe it properly, Tom. Maybe you can color it in for me. I don't know that I've met a hockey player whose personality is the same as Jack Hughes. A, have you ever met anyone like Jack Hughes? And B, what do you see in this player?
Well, I mean, I you're right. I get to see Jack every day, whether it's in practice, see him in the lunchroom, and then watch him play games, and the things that he can do. They pull me out of my seat. He really does. His hands, his quickness, his elusiveness, his hockey IQ, the vision, all the things that we all saw he displayed is elite. Will the body catch up to the skill? And it's getting there. He's still a young 20-year-old physically. So, and he's improving that. And you can see it in his shot. You see it in his quickness off the mark. Jack is a highly competitive kid. He really is. He's one of the most competitive players I've ever been around post-playing. Watching the way he goes about his business in the weight room. And I was real lucky, post-playing, being in Pittsburgh and watching Sid and Gino and how they worked and how they brought it every day and what they did and how they led. And I played with some great players as well, Hall of Famers that did the same thing. Jack just has a skill set, a mindset that he wants to be the best. And he's got those tools. We're excited for him. We know what his capabilities are. We look forward to, surrounding him with players that can complement him as well. And we feel we've got kids coming that will ride shotgun with him at some point. But he's a very, like I said, he's uber competitive, and you can't teach that. And that's the one thing I take away from Jack.
And now it's a family affair with the New Jersey Devils and the Hughes family. I'm curious about a couple of things. You, as we all know, drafted Luke, his brother, who's a big defenseman. One, at what point did you and your staff decide there's no way Luke Hughes is getting past us in the draft? And two, were you ever tempted to tell that to Jack?
Well, no for your second part. Because it really came down to the 11th hour with us, because of how deep that draft was, especially where we were picking, we knew we were getting a really, really good player. You look at the mobility, you look at his age, he's the youngest kid in the draft. You looked at, the tests that we put together for all these prospects, the leadership, the competitiveness that jumped off the page to us. And, this was all about Luke Hughes. This had nothing to do with Jack Hughes or his family. This was about the New Jersey Devils picking the best player for us. And that's what Luke Hughes was. And there was never a heads up to the family or Jack. Like, he probably wouldn't have reacted the way he did if he had an inkling, right?
No, he told us point blank he had no clue that was all legit.
Yeah, that was sincere, and you saw the excitement he had, and that's what's exciting about what we're building here in New Jersey with those two kids in particular, and other kids are surrounding them, and we've got some good young leaders, Nico Hischier, Ty Smith's he's going to be a hell of a leader as well. So we're excited here, and Luke, we look forward to that day he becomes a New Jersey Devil, but in the meantime he's on a college team that could challenge a lot of NHL teams or pro teams anyways out of Michigan.
You mentioned Ty Smith a second ago, and he rooms with Jack Hughes. You have a thought on that combination living together?
Yeah, you know what? They're just fun to be around. They really have hit it off. They've really become best buds, and it's fun to watch. It's just the enthusiasm. Genuine enthusiasm that they bring to the rink every day is contagious. You can't help yourself but smile. And I think Lindy Ruff's the perfect coach for these kids. You know, his temperament, his personality, happy-go-lucky. But, you know, he's demanding as well. So I think it's just with those two in particular are I think they're two peas in a pod. And I think Lindy has a really good grasp on how to coach these kids and how to relate to them as well.
With Tom Fitzgerald, New Jersey Devils general manager, the Mackenzie Blackwood situation, it seems as if the goaltender now is inching more towards getting vaccinated. How would you describe this entire process from your chair, Tom?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to lie. It's a bit frustrating. Would I like all my players to be vaccinated at this point? Would I like to be 100%? Yeah, I would. You know, we dodged the bullet the other day. With a positive test.
Yeah.
And it's just not going to change. It's going to happen again somewhere. We're lucky it was exhibition. So you get on the road and it puts us in a very vulnerable place, to be quite honest. And Mackenzie knows that, and he doesn't want to be a distraction at all. And what I said on another podcast, like he's never said he's not going to get it. It's just when he feels at the right time. And I think that's coming.
I'm curious how do you have a conversation with, like, because I haven't had one, like everyone that I'm, whether it's my family or in close contact with is all, are all vaccinated. I don't even know how to begin to have a conversation with someone on your team and not just play the you're letting everybody down card. Or is that the card that you have to play in this situation?
No, it's not. I mean, how I handled it was, here's all the information you need to know. You know, I know the PA has got some great people to talk to, as well as really what the shot is, and, you know, if you have any questions, I know they'd be able to answer. But from us, it wasn't. There was no guilt. There was no begging. I just want to lay out all the protocols to him. And to be quite honest, make sure he knows we will be holding his feet to the fire for every single protocol. And then that actually leaked into our training staff and our equipment staff and our strength and conditioning staff, and even our coaching staff. If we can't police him from wearing a mask, and he's done a much, much better job. He's been really diligent with the mask. Prior to that, it was like, I'm going to just start sending people home and suspending people who can't keep him accountable if I'm not around. So that's the card I was playing, you know. And I will say he has respected that. He knows that his choices potentially could hurt others. But he's been much better, and it's good to see. But, you know, at the end of the day, I want people to tell me when he got it, not he's going to get it or he's thinking about getting it. Just tell me when he gets it.
See, I would wonder about, you know, going through the schedule and talking about key games in Canada towards the end, and like, listen, we need these games. Like if it comes down to this, like this is, like, I don't know. I always sort of, you know, you always put yourself in other people's positions, and I've thought a lot about this one. And I've said to myself, you know, if I were Tom Fitzgerald, what would I do here? And I'd be tempted to go to the schedule and say, listen, these are crucial games we're going to need down the stretch, and they're being played in Canada, and we need you for these. Like I don't know. It's like that would be the one that's the one sort of thing that jumps out at me, Tom.
Well, I mean, not looking at the end of the season schedule, but I think there's a lot to be said about when we actually go to Canada, and that potentially may be running through his brain of the runway that he's on to get this. And again, I don't want to speak for him, but, you know, when he talks about, you know, the right time, or I think there's a part of the decision making will come to we part of this where our schedule's at and when we do go to Canada, and that's early December, you know, so there's a little bit of a runway in his brain. That's what I'm taking away from this.
A couple of more things about a couple of your players. I saw that Alexander Holtz was sent down to Utica today. I know that's a tough decision. Dawson Mercer still up with the squad. Where are you at right now with Mercer's development and where he's at with his game? You know, you mentioned a couple of moments ago you were surrounding Hughes with some other players. Where is the GM at on Dawson Mercer, another first-round pick?
I sit there and pinch myself every day. I watch him thinking I didn't know he was this good. I didn't know he was going to be this good and this good this quick. He hasn't taken his foot off the pedal since our rookie term in Buffalo, where he was outstanding. He's acquitted himself quite nicely with our group. Always asking questions. Always has a smile on his face. Always looking to do something different to get better. There are some things in his game that we have to help him with. You know, i.e. faceoffs, but his hockey sense. The skill, his versatility, his vision, his flexibility, the flexibility he gives us to move him up and down the lineup. He's earned this to start here, and he's done a great job. Alexander Holtz also earned the right. He played well. You know, his game continued to get better as with each day. You know, from Buffalo, he was good, but I thought he got better playing with the NHL guys. For us, we don't feel we could give him the quality ice time, you know, first, second power play, regular shift, maybe 4-on-4, the proper minutes that you need to not lose your confidence. And I also, we all know here, the start of the season's a little different than exhibition. You know, the rosters are a little different, and the third pair defense are actually really good and hard to play against. And not that he couldn't do that, but we just wanted him to get down and get going and really keep that competitive fire that he has going and make sure, you know, he's got to get stronger. His conditioning needs to improve like all young kids. And that's what we can offer him in Utica. I don't think you can ever overcook somebody, but I never want to undercook him by keeping him up here if I can't give him what he properly needs for his full development and what we envision him being. You know, we envision him being that top six right wing scoring winger because he proved it in some of the exhibition games and how well he shoots it. But, you know, let's go down and keep going. Keep the feet moving. Keep your speed. You know, just small little things that he needs to concentrate on and create habits with. We'll be able to do that down in Utica. And, you know, Kevin, that he's a hell of a coach. You know, he's seen it all. And if there's anyone who we know can help, you know, Alex's game, it's going to be Kevin.
Jimmy Vesey, the last that people saw, or most recently, if they saw the Amazon series involving the Toronto Maple Leafs, they saw him involved in a couple of really difficult conversations, one with Sheldon Keefe and another with Kyle Dubas. And for some, that might be shocking, but that's just the nature of the industry, and that's just the honesty that you get when you have a conversation with a coach or a manager. What did Jimmy Vesey do to earn his spot with the New Jersey Devils, to earn a contract?
Well, I think when he did earn it, we liked his game because his game's different than it was when he came out of college or when he was with the Rangers. He knows where he's at in his career, and he knows what he knows what he needs to be as a player to continue to play at the National Hockey League level. You know, I had some frank talks with him, you know, transitioning his game, kind of rebooting yourself into something different. Be that penalty killer. Be that guy who blocks shots. Be that guy who gets to the net and uses his big frame, a guy who finishes his checks, holds on the pucks, and then changes and do it again. That should be your identity. And he showed us that he can do that. He's versatile. He can play left wing or right wing. But he's really helped us on the penalty kill during training camp. So, that's what we were looking for out of him. We weren't looking for anything else. We've got enough skill up front. We've got enough left shot skilled guys that can play on our power play. I wanted some bottom type players who are heavy, are willing to play heavy, are willing to take hits. So, you know what? Like now that he's earned this, we'll just again try to continue to keep his feet to the fire with his ice time, and I don't think he'll disappoint. I think he knows where he's at. And like I said, I think he understands what he needs to do to reinvent himself as a hockey player if he wants to continue to play at this level. That's for sure.
A couple things quick, and then we'll let you get on with your day, Tom. I just mentioned that Maple Leafs docuseries with Amazon. If Amazon approached you and said, "We'd like to do one, follow you guys, yourself, Lindy, the team, all of you guys, we'd like to follow you around for an entire season," what would the GM say?
I think it would be great as long as we get to edit it. I think, just seeing really what it's like every day to walk in the coach's shoes or GM shoes and being around our players and, really who we are as people and understand, I think it'd be great. I've done a couple in my past, but I have no, promoting our team is that would do it. So I would love to do it.
And finally, PK Subban, in the last year of his contract, have there been any conversations about extension or anything else like that?
No, not at this point with any of my players that are coming up on their last year of their deals. Just want to keep people focused and concentrating on this season and what training camp is all about, what our goals are, how we're going to play, how we're going to stick up for each other and stick up for yourself and compete. That's it. I haven't talked to anybody about contracts.
Gotcha. You've been very generous with your time. Tom, thanks so much for joining me today. Much appreciated. Best of luck with the New Jersey Devils this year. It's an exciting team. It's a team that's on the rise, and we wish you all the best.
Awesome. Appreciate it. See ya.
There he is. Tom Fitzgerald, general manager of the New Jersey Devils, addressing a number of things there. Matt Marchese, our producer, including the Mackenzie Blackwood situation. Nothing by way of extension right now for PK Subban. The Jimmy Vesey, that conversation I find to be an interesting one. I'm always curious in the conversation where a coach or a general manager pulls you aside and says, that thing that's worked for you your whole life, yeah, you need to stop doing that and do something else if you want to have a future in the NHL. The one obvious guy that I keep coming back to who recreated himself after being a real high scorer his entire life, and specifically playing junior hockey, was Andrew Cogliano, who got to the NHL and realized, I can't play like that here. There's no room for me here. Everybody is good here. And he went about becoming a sneaky Selke Trophy candidate, stealth Selke Trophy guy each and every season. He was able to do it. The question now for Jimmy Vesey at 28 years of age is, can he do that? When his entire life, he's wanted to be the Jack Hughes of the team. Now, all of a sudden, you want me to be the Louis Erickson of the team, or the Dallas Stars Louis Erickson of the team. You know what I mean, Maddie?
Oh, yeah. And it's the willingness of the player to, because that's an ego check for these guys as well, Jeff. These guys that are, because when we talk about guys that are in the NHL, when they were coming up through the system, whether it be minor hockey, once they got into junior or college, generally speaking, they were among the three best players on their teams at all times.
Always.
So when you get to that point, and somebody pulls you aside and says, hey, you're not good enough to score goals at this level, you're going to have to figure out how to play, or this is how you have to play in order to keep your job, there's an adjustment period for these guys in that it's a total ego check for them, because they're not the best players on their team anymore. And if you want to maintain this, let's call it lavish lifestyle of being an NHL hockey player and the five-star hotels and the first-class travel, well, you better figure it out. And for a guy like Jimmy Vesey, it still stuns me that he's 28 years old. But,
he did the full freight of college, though, right?
Yeah. And that is a total eye-opener for a guy like that. So, when you look at that Devils team, when I was looking at their roster, it looks like a pretty good young core that they have there. And then you add in guys like Dougie Hamilton and Ryan Graves, and PK Subban is still there. And you hope that Mackenzie Blackwood is the goalie that you thought he was going to be. Like Boomer Gordon said in the last hour, that is a sneaky, it's the scariest unscary team that he can think of right now. Yeah. And it is really interesting that, New Jersey has kind of built that.
But that's it. Like, you watch the Devils last season, and they looked profoundly different. And they couldn't put it together for, you know, on a consistent basis for all three periods. But there was always something in every game where you said, this team's going to be good. Like, there was something that, you know, in the scant handful of games that Nico Hischier played last year, although, man, I think Hischier's going to be a star. I still believe that. He's so talented. Or, you know, Jack Hughes will do something and it'll just click for him. Or, you know, even someone lower down, like a Miles Wood, does something and you're like, you know what, there's something there. And it's a team that is... all in on analytics. They have one of the more robust, I mean, the whole ownership group is, and all the teams that they own and manage. But it's a strongly analytics fueled team. And it's a team that, you know, places a premium on, don't tell me what my eyes see. I'm not making the decisions on that. Tell me what the results are. Do these players get results? And how do these players project? And I got a lot of time for a team like that. And they couple that with, you know, a couple of older school guys like Tom Fitzgerald, who's a general manager and who's still a progressive thinker, I should point out, too. And Lindy Ruff as well, who I still think, you know, Lindy Ruff has this unique ability. And he certainly did when he played with the Buffalo Sabres. And he was there forever. And you don't do this without that unique ability. And that is the ability to know when the players have heard enough of you. And it's time to turn it over to the assistants and let them talk and you just be quiet because they don't need to hear from me because they're getting sick of me. Like I thought Tom Fitzgerald's point about, you know, we're not at the point where we're learning to crawl. Right now we're learning to walk. We're not ready to run yet. I don't know if this team is too far away from running. Like, I don't know if they get a lot of production from their bottom six. That's going to be an issue. I don't know if there's going to be more you're going to get out of someone like Pavel Zacha, but I know that someone like Sarangovic still has more to give. I know that Hughes does. I know that Hischier does. I know that like Dawson Mercer and Alexander Holtz. I know those big spots for those two guys in the future. I don't know. I just think that it looks very much and feels very much like it's starting to come together finally for the New Jersey Devils. Like, I'm with Boomer. Like, I don't think they're a pushover. I don't think they should terrify any teams, but it's a team that I wouldn't take lightly. We'll put it that way.
They are a team that is going to be a pain in the rear end when you play against them because they're young, they've got some skill, they can skate, but they also have some veteran guys that, you know, you think are still pretty good. Like, I love the Ryan Graves acquisition. I really do. I'm a fan of Dougie Hamilton's offensive game. I'm not so sure about him in his own zone. That's been the knock on him forever. But, you know, the one thing that I really did like about what Tom said was we're in the learning to win games phase, and teams do go through that, but I don't think that teams necessarily want to think that way because it's like, okay, you know, our young guys got to get experience, and whether we win or lose, it doesn't matter, but you have to win games in this league to get any sort of confidence, Jeff, and we've seen that. And Tom said, I can't keep trading veterans at the deadline. That does not create a good culture in your dressing room because guys are saying, well, I'm here for a good time, not a long time, right? And maybe New Jersey isn't a destination for guys because they're not winning games. Like, that changes everything. And, you know, what helps with the confidence of the younger players? Well, it helps that you win hockey games. Like, the best thing for Jack Hughes is to see that this team, you know, wins hockey games because Jack Hughes is going to need a contract at some point as well. And you want Jack Hughes to stay there for a long time and maybe be a Devil for the rest of his career. Well, what's going to make that happen is this organization needs to win games and they need to win them soon.
And they got some players on the horizon, most notably defensemen as well. Listen, we already mentioned Holtz and Mercer's already on the team, but whether it's Luke Hughes, Jack Hughes's brother, or one of the more interesting players from the 2020 draft, and some say was a stretch, pardon the pun, that they took him 20th overall, Shakir Mukhamudulin is a fascinating left-shot defenseman. 6'4", a scant 178 pounds, so still needs to fill out, but wildly talented. And this guy makes the NHL. He becomes... one of the more interesting players, one of the more interesting blue liners in the entire league. Mooka Madulin, don't forget that name. I know everyone's going to go gaga for Hughes and get him in there, and but Mooka Madulin's a nice player too. We'll hit a break. Maddie, more from you in a couple of moments. But up next, Joey Kenward from Sportsnet 650. We'll talk about the Vancouver Canucks. What's next for them? And more specifically, where did it go wrong with Olli Juolevi? Once a fifth overall. We all remember the Buffalo draft, right? Matthews, Line A, Dubois, Puljujärvi, and then Juolevi. Where did it go wrong now that he's a Florida Panther? That answer in moments as the Merrick Show continues across the Sportsnet Radio Network. Welcome back to the program. A little bit later on this afternoon, I believe Jim Benning will be addressing the media. This is after Olli Juolevi was dealt to the Florida Panthers yesterday. Juho Lamico, Noah Juulsen is the return for the former fifth overall draft pick. It's never a dull day in Vancouver around the Vancouver Canucks. Here to shed some light on all of it from Sportsnet 650, our good friend Joey Kenward. Joey, how are you today, bud?
I'm well. Happy Thanksgiving, Jeff. And yes, never dull here on the West Coast, even if there's no games being played here right now. Preseason's done. Regular season starts Wednesday, but it's never dull here on the West Coast.
No, never dull, and occasionally, and some would say often, puzzling. The question that we all have now, going back to the Buffalo draft, where Matthews went first and Laine went second, Juolevi went fifth, what happened? Why did it not work out with Olli Juolevi and the Vancouver Canucks? I remember, geez, you and I even spoke that draft. Might have been right around combine time about Olli Juolevi, you know, playing on the London Knights, Memorial Cup champion team, just saw him in Red Deer. Kid looked fantastic. Fifth overall pick, drafted ahead of defenseman, you know, like Mikhail Sergachev, drafted over, you know, Charlie McAvoy, these types of players. Where did it go wrong?
Yeah, it's easy to look back now and sort of dissect it all. When you look back at that draft class, Jeff, like Olli Juolevi probably was the surefire best defenseman available going into that draft. And you look at the way things have panned out, there's a lot of other blue liners that have certainly made a better name for themselves at the NHL level instead of him. You throw Jacob Chychrun into that conversation as well, right? So it's where's it all going wrong? You have to look at it, I think, a few different ways. One, after he finished playing in the OHL, and you remember, he was part of that rock star group in London that won the Memorial Cup. He went back home to Finland, played his first year of pro, and then he wound up requiring back surgery after that year. He had to repair a disc in his back, but he came to North America after that. That was the summer of 2018. The winter of that year, he had a serious knee injury when he was playing with the Utica Comets in the American League. That required surgery. Fast forward to the fall of the 2019 season. He gets a hip injury, you know, a couple of months into the season. He misses more than a month of action and then just didn't seem to be himself. And then you get him coming into Vancouver in the shortened season where, you know, the Canucks have defensemen higher up the depth chart than him. The team wants to be able to give him a look, but really he's penciled in on a blue line where he's the rotating seventh defenseman, and he doesn't play a lot of NHL games, 23 to be exact, on a team that leaked in a lot of goals. Was he given, I think, a lot of ample opportunity to show that he could play at this level? Yes, I think he was showing that in preseason the past couple of years. This year, though, when given the opportunity, it just didn't look like he was the player the organization expected him to be at this age. Now, whether the injuries have anything to do with that or not, I don't think anybody knows other than Olli Juolevi. But he certainly, I think, probably could have done himself much better favor for the coaches and management if he had come out really showing that he was at 100% fitness, ready to be able to take the next step as a pro. And he just didn't. You know, he appeared in four preseason games and had two combined shots on net. That doesn't scream excitement. That doesn't scream, I'm ready to get to the level I want to be at. So Canucks were able to make a trade. getting a couple players out of Florida that have obviously had a tough time finding their way as full-time NHLers, just like Yolevi has. I think when you dissect it like that, have injuries played a part? Yes. Has he, though, not been able to take the step when he's at 100% health? I think there's a lot to be said about that as well.
And while we're sticking with blue liners here, Joey, I don't know what the issue is with Travis Hamonic. People have speculated that it's a vaccination issue. That's never been confirmed, although Vancouver has talked about one player at camp who wasn't vaccinated. I don't know what the issue is with Travis Hamonic, placed on waivers by the Vancouver Canucks. This is after a couple of months ago signing a 2-year, $6 million deal. Where's the organization at on Travis Hamonic, and do you have any idea what the issue could be here?
I'm with you, Jeff, on this. I don't know. I really don't know. Other than what we do know is that he has been placed on the list of most recent players that have been designated to be assigned to the AHL team they've now got in Abbotsford, just down the road from where the Canucks play. Now, does that mean if he clears waivers that he's automatically going to play in the American League? No, it doesn't. Does it mean that he's not going to show up in Vancouver? No, it doesn't. Does it mean that wherever, is he going to be put on a suspended list? Like, nobody seems to know. And I wish I had a better concrete answer for you as to what the ultimate situation is here. Mm-hmm. But I really don't have much in the way of inside knowledge on that. Nobody seems to, whether it's those working inside or outside the market. Regardless of whatever the situation is, if he's not able to play, at least to start the year, that puts a huge amount of emphasis on the right side of the Canucks blue line. I think they're pretty happy with the fact that Tyler Myers and Tucker Poolman sort of being slotted in as those top two right side blue liners. But after that, if Hamonic's not here, well, who's going to fill the void? And then they brought in a 10-year veteran in Luke Shen in the offseason. I don't think he was probably expecting to be a top 60 man on this team to start the year, but he very well could be when the team hits the ice Wednesday in Edmonton. It's a really interesting scenario that the organization finds itself in, one they, I'm sure, didn't want to be even thinking about when they re-upped Hamonic, but I'm sure we'll get a little more clarity here over the next day or so, especially when Jim Benning meets with the media later this morning here in Vancouver.
Sticking with defensemen then too, just talking to Boomer Gordon about this in the first hour.
Yeah.
I like the Connor Garland part of the Oliver Ekman-Larsson deal. Like, I like the Connor Garland part a lot. I think that's a real winner, and it helps cement, a top nine that can score for the Vancouver Canucks. I like that. But I think the same take on Oliver Ekman-Larsson as, a player making whose cap hit is $7.2 million is, this is an enormous gamble for a 30-year-old that's coming off of a couple of soft seasons in the desert. This is a big gamble, hoping that he can rediscover what he once was, get that magic back when Oliver Ekman-Larsson was at the height of his powers. It's tough to find it at his age. Generally, players don't. And if this doesn't work, this could be disastrous for the Vancouver Canucks salary cap situation. What's your take on the Oliver Ekman-Larsson presence, both immediate and long-term future with Vancouver? To me, and I think a lot of people, this is a huge risk.
Well, I'm sure the coaches, management, and ownership are hoping that it's a gamble that pays off in a big, big way. Because as you said, you throw around those dollars, you throw around that remaining term for a player that stats-wise, performance-wise, seems to have regressed the past couple of years compared to where he was not long ago playing in Arizona. I will say this, and he's a veteran in this league. He's played a lot on a poor team. If ever there was an example of a player maybe needing a fresh start, maybe wiping the slate clean and getting into a new environment, it's a guy like the player they know here as OEL. Now, I'm not saying that he's going to come to Vancouver here and everything's going to be put in the rearview mirror and he's going to be the stud on defense that this team needs. But I think there's certainly an opportunity for him to bounce back. I think there's certainly an opportunity for him to be a really, really important, impactful blue liner in both ends of the rink for Vancouver. And remember, as I mentioned not long ago with you, Jeff, like, this is a team that struggled in their own zone. It's a team that's been able to score goals, but they've had a real, real big-time issue getting the puck out of their own zone, and that's put a ton of pressure on their goaltenders. Oliver Ekman-Larsson, and I'm only basing it on what I've seen in the preseason, and I know a lot of people will say preseason doesn't mean squat, but with what you've seen out of him in a new environment with new players and getting to work with new coaches, he looks like he's ready to play. He wound up appearing in four preseason games. He led all Vancouver blue liners in ice time and in shots per game in the games he played. I think it's a pretty good move for him, and the Canucks can only keep their fingers crossed that it's a good move for the organization. He's a type of defenseman that I think a lot of teams would love to have, regardless of his age and salary, because he certainly has the tools and has shown before that he can be a big-time difference maker in both ends of the rink whenever he steps over the boards.
Quinn Hughes, my question or my curiosity about him doesn't revolve so much around himself and what he can do, but more who Vancouver chooses to play with him. You know, you think back to someone like, you know, Sergei Gonchar. He was always great when he was paired with someone like Ken Klee. And Quinn Hughes was fantastic when paired with someone like Chris Tanev. He's, of course, now in Calgary.
Yeah.
Who's the right partner, in your estimation, for Quinn Hughes?
If I was a betting man to start the year, I think he's going to be paired up alongside Tucker Poolman. Now, that means you're paired up with a guy you have never played with before. But when you look at Quinn Hughes, when he's come in here to the NHL, well, he's been playing with a lot of different defensemen. As you mentioned, Tanev, when he came in for his quick audition coming out of the University of Michigan for that the five games at the end of the season a couple of years ago, his D partner was Luke Shen. Maybe he plays again with Shen. I think it's Poolman, and I'll tell you why. Tucker Poolman last year, and for about, I think a better part of the year before in Winnipeg, you know his defense partner was? That was Josh Morrissey. A pretty good compliment for an offensive-minded defenseman to have a guy that's a little bit more of a stay-at-home approach rear guard. Make no mistake about it, though, regardless of ever who he's paired up with, Quinn Hughes needs to be able to be a big-time performer for this team in all-game situations, because he's going to be dependent upon in a big, big way in all-game situations, five-on-five, power play, extra attacker situations. He's probably not going to see a lot of time on the penalty kill, and they don't want him to be a PK blue liner. But, you know, you sign that big ticket, you put up those numbers in a short period of time offensively for a team that's had its struggles the last couple of years on the power play. They need him, regardless of who he's paired up with, Jeff. They need him to be the rock star defenseman that he's shown glimpses of already at the NHL level. And I think he's ready for the challenge. He certainly, although he only played two preseason games after signing his contract, holding out, he looks like he's ready to get going here.
Before we get going, and thank you for your contributions today, which of the forwards, and like there's some new players coming in, whether it's former first rounder Vasily Podkolzin, whether it's Jason Dickinson who comes in from Dallas. So it could be either players that are established and longtime Vancouver Canucks or one of the new guys. And I mentioned Connor Garland a couple of seconds ago. Who's the most intriguing forward for you at this point in advance of the regular season puck dropping?
Yeah, you know, you could throw a lot of different names into that conversation with who's most intriguing to start the year and to hopefully get this team to be a playoff team next spring. You've got new faces, Garland, who's been in the league for a while and who the team, you know, has had their eye on for quite some time. You talk about players like Dickinson and Justin Dowling, who have showed well in camp, and obviously the team's had confidence in them to sign them to contracts in the offseason. I think Nils Höglander, how will he perform in his sophomore season? Then you've got veteran scorers on this team like Bo Horvat and Brock Besser. When they're at 100% health, they've shown that they can be extremely productive, consistent scoring threats anytime they step onto the ice. But to me, and I know this might sound weird to some, like to me, the most intriguing player might be their best forward, and that's Elias Pettersson. You know, a guy that missed more than half the season last year has signed a pretty good contract extension when you're talking about a bridge deal. he's a guy that I know would love nothing more than just to put the foot down on the gas pedal right out of the get-go and lead the charge offensively. He's shown that in a couple of the preseason games. He's a threat whenever he is on the ice, particularly on the power play. And for a team that needs production spread out, they need their bit, like they showed last year, Jeff. You take one top gun out of that lineup, it's going to be hard for them to win. And you just look at the stats. Last year, the power play goal scoring leaders were Bo Horvat, Brock Besser. Do you know who was third on the team in power play goals? Elias Pettersson. And he missed more than half of the season. Wow. What does that tell you, right? So they need, it goes without saying, and I know it sounds like Captain Obvious, they need him to get back on track. And if he's 100% healthy, I think he's got an excellent opportunity to not only be the team's scoring leader, but be the real engine driver for this team to have what they hope can be as big a bounce back year as possible from one season to the next.
Okay, I lied. One more question because I'm curious. For you, is JT Miller a winger or a center?
Yeah, you know what? It's funny because I can't believe we went this whole conversation without a guy that's been a pretty impressive performer for them. And arguably, since he's come into the organization, their most consistent offensive threat. But he's been healthy, right? And that's a key for why he's been able to put up the numbers. To me, watching him, and because of Pedersen's absence to start camp, holding out until he signed his contract, and because of Brandon Sutter and Tyler Motte sidelined with injuries through the preseason, Canucks needed Miller to be in the middle. But when I look at the depth chart on this team, where's JT Miller more effective for the group? Is he more effective playing on the wing alongside a guy like Pedersen or Horvat? Or, if those two are healthy, is he more effective being a quote-unquote third-line center who he's also going to get power play time and time on the PK? That's something fans are really eager to see the decision made by Travis Green and his coaching staff. To me, I think he's more effective and more important on the wing. But if you don't have depth centers like Sutter and Motte, and if you're still trying to figure out what guys like Dickinson and Dowling will mean as depth guys down the middle, maybe they start Miller as a center iceman. I think that he's more effective, though, on the wing, but I'm not the coach, and I'm really interested to see how the coach deploys his players once they start playing for keeps here later on this week.
Excellent stuff. Joey, always a delight. The Benning press conference should be interesting. It always is, as it's always fascinating around Vancouver Canucks territory. We thank you for this. We'll catch up real soon. Thanks, Joey.
Thanks, Jeff, and again, to you and everybody else, enjoy the rest of your Thanksgiving Monday.
Absolutely. Happy Thanksgiving, pal. There he is, Joey Kenward from Sportsnet 650. Never a dull moment with the Vancouver Canucks, Maddie. I'll tell you, it's Vancouver is a... First of all, there are a few fans that are as passionate about their team and at the same time, razor blade critical of everything around it, more so than Vancouver Canucks fans. Like, they...
Be the only
they don't
one.
Like something, they really don't like something.
And yeah, Munch.
I agree with Boomer. Like, I think this is a huge, the Oliver Ekman-Larsson situation, that's a large gamble. Like, that's a, I don't want to say it's a move you make just to try to save your job, but we all know what's at stake here for the Vancouver Canucks. This has to be a playoff team, or there will be very difficult conversations and decisions at the end of it.
Is there ever a time when this Canucks team could make a move and it's this season going to the Pacific Division, which, you know, as we look at it, isn't very good, Jeff. Like, it's certainly not one of the best divisions of the four. And, you know, I look at their depth chart, you know, it's a deep team, Jeff. It's not just some hodgepodge put together team that you look at and go, nah, they're not very good. When you look at the top two lines, pretty impressive. The acquisitions of Connor Garland and Oliver Ekman-Larsson, I think, are big. And Quinn Hughes is you know, another year older, and we're going to see more of, at some point, Jack Rathbone. So there's lots of talent there. And, you know, about the Oliver Ekman-Larsson thing, just quickly, you know, everybody talked about his game dropping. Jeff, at some point, playing for an organization where just nothing goes right and you're constantly losing, doesn't that have an effect on you? Like, doesn't it? You just don't want to show up to the rink some days?
Yeah, but the question then becomes, like, how much is that now all of a sudden bred into the bone? Like, how much of that is now baked into the cake or baked into the pie for Oliver Ekman-Larsson? That becomes the question. You know, yeah. You always wonder about, you see this come trade deadline time when a team makes a trade from someone for someone and their team has bottomed out and hasn't been in contention for the playoffs going back to like early December. What are you getting at trade deadline? Are you getting a checked out player from a checked out team and all of a sudden you got to pick it up and start playing playoff hockey down the stretch? Like, that's the thing. That's what I wonder about Oliver Ekman-Larsson. Like, what type of damage has been done from those last few seasons playing with the Arizona Coyotes? Or can you flip the switch and all of a sudden I'm the Oliver Ekman-Larsson from four seasons ago? I don't know the answer to that, but we're going to find out. Vancouver, again, one of the more intriguing teams across the NHL. Thanks for joining me today. Thanks to all of our guests, Tom Fitzgerald, Elliot Friedman, Joey Kenward, and earlier Jim Boomer Gordon, Chuck Fletcher, GM of the Philadelphia Flyers, on tomorrow's show. Happy Thanksgiving. Enjoy the rest of your day.